Welcome to Vistage Live, the place you can come to for insights, knowledge and perspectives from a range of experts who can help your small and mid-sized business make a great big impact. Our guest today is Mark Puncher. Mark has spent much of the last 22 years with one foot in talent attraction and the other in marketing. He has run employer branding or Marcoms operations in the UK and Australia for recruitment and media organisations, including Employment Office, Guardian Jobs, Hobsons, and TES Global. Mark lives and breathes talent marketing and loves helping fantastic, imperfect organisations bring their stories to life to connect with their current and future superstars. Mark Puncher, welcome to Vistage Live.
Thank you for having me.
This is your first time on Vistage Live, as it's now known.
It is.
And it's wonderful to see you again for another conversation.
Thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm a huge fan of what you do, certainly in the employer branding, talent attraction area. But we thought we'd expand the conversation a little bit today to be generally about how to win through your people.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you seeing happen in the world of talent?
Look, I think it's a really interesting moment, and it's a really challenging moment.
Mm.
And the heart of it all is the world has changed so much, the market has changed so much. We've gone from a talent boom where everybody had options, everybody was hiring, you know, in the tech sector. Investors were only backing businesses that were aggressively growing to almost the opposite. You know, we see a lot of companies, a lot of organizations, a lot of sectors that are shrinking and many, many more that are on pause and that are they're sort of in limbo. There is brilliant business being done across Australia right now, but organizations are having to work smarter and harder than before. And at the same time as you've got companies who are pushing hard, who are trying to figure out what the future is, that see that complexity and uncertainty, you've got a whole population of people who are in what we call personal recession. So their groceries cost more, their home loans or their rental cost more. Everything feels harder. And so you've got a really challenging moment where I think there's a real risk of an even greater distancing of the employer from the employee, where employees are needing more, are wanting more, are less, as a result, potentially less loyal. At the same time, employers are really saying, can we do this? You know, where are we going to go next?
Well, employers are needing more, wanting more.
That's right.
Because
they want more productivity.
They
want more energy. They want more commitment. They want more patience. You know, we had years where it was pay rises left, right, and center. It was breaking your wage structure to bring new people in because you had to compete in the market. And I think employees got quite used to that. And now there's a lot of employees going to their bosses saying, look, I need more money to pay for the life that I have, for my bills and so on. And for many employers, that's just not a realistic prospect.
No, it isn't. And I think there's also the challenges that the market has shifted because people coming in could ask for a lot of money. And so people's expectations of salaries, I think, became inflated. Have you seen that?
Super interesting. And once you've reached a certain level of salary, it's very hard to climb down from that.
Of course.
I've had, for my own business, I've had people who come and say, well, I'm looking for X amount. And then they pause and they say, but if it's less, that's okay. And you sort of, you know.
We're hearing a lot of that. But, you know, for the right role.
Yeah.
And I'd probably say that differently.
Well, I mean, this one gentleman said to me, you know, I sort of said, look, we'd be paying $50,000 under what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So we can't really.
Yeah.
It's not fair for you. It's not fair for us. And he said, no, I'm open to it. And it just felt so wrong because somebody's going to come in and they're already starting on the wrong foot.
Yes.
I guess what I'm seeing in the market is, yep, some challenge. But rather than sort of waiting for an uptick and seeing that happen, I think it's about saying, how do we get through whatever the next chapter is for us and prepare for the one after that with our people? How do we actually take this opportunity to get closer to our people, to bring them closer to us and to inspire and empower them, not just to stick around, but to perform?
And I think that's there's the rub, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more than retention. It's high performance.
That's right.
And I hear that from so many of the mid-sized businesses I'm talking to. How do we get high performance from teams who may be personally struggling. So where do you start?
You start by listening. And there's a lot of leadership out there, a lot of leaders who think it's almost like that command and control. They think they need to have the answers. They think they need to show bold, clear course of action or direction. And I think that's, especially in this sort of market, I think that's the wrong approach.
Mm.
If you want, there's something I talk about quite a lot at the moment, and that's, you know, there's no, it's not enough to just feel valued. Mm. You've got to feel valuable. And I think the key to somebody staying with you and choosing to step up, whether it's to step up and lead, whether it's to stay late and get the job done, whether it's to, you know, really have the hard conversations with their peers around, come on, let's do better. It's the sense that you are of consequence. And so the best way to, you know, empower someone, inspire them, is to ask for their help. So what I see, I have seen over the years too much of, is leaders curating these moments where we will listen to our employees, we'll send an annual survey, you know, we will ask them these questions, and we will, you know, and it feels quite disingenuous, and sometimes it is quite disingenuous. And even if you go in with the right intention, it's all too structured and directed. Whereas actually, I'll give you an example. If you're, or anybody's listening to this, if you're going through a tough time or an uncertain time, and let's say you've got 30 people, 40 people, put them around a table, you know, put them into smaller groups. You know, I'd say, for what it's worth, I'd say groups of eight, nine. Yeah. And say, look, these are the challenges we're facing. This is where we've come from. This is where we are today. This is where we need to get to survive or to thrive or to really change and evolve the way we need to. Help us figure out how we're going to get there.
Mm.
And there is a wonderful moment where a leader takes all that pressure off their shoulders.
Mm.
It is not your responsibility to have all the answers and to direct this. Actually, it's your responsibility to enable and inspire and empower everybody who works here to be part of that solution. So I think listening and genuinely listening and learning is key. One of the very specific things we'll do, obviously, you need to set the course. You need to talk, you know, at the top of the organization, from the top of the organization, this is where we're heading.
Yeah.
But I always say, if you can be really clear on your strategy, you know, what your vision, if you like, and then the strategy overall, if you can be really clear on your purpose, why you exist, the next step is that everybody in your team need to ensure that they are able to, in their own words, articulate that purpose and that strategy. What are we trying to achieve? How are we going to get there? And why do we exist? And how does my role contribute to those things?
Yeah.
And I think that's the bit that people often miss. Sort of like, you know, we talk about internal comms. I mean, we're thinking broadcast. What else are we going to tell them, rather than, what are we going to ask them? How are we going to collaborate to find answers and solutions and ways forward?
How is this different from what good leadership's always looked like?
My take is it's more, the need for authenticity is even stronger.
Why is that?
This is probably one for over a glass of wine, but what I'd say,
it's very early in the morning.
You think about one of the biggest changes in society and in humanity is phones being wired, social media. It's what we do. One of the biggest changes is we have grown generations of people who think that they always need to broadcast certainty and happiness and positivity when actually underneath, you know, usually it's quite the opposite, you know, and so I think there's a vulnerability that's there that for years it's strange, because on one hand we've mollycoddled everyone and said, you know, participation medals and you know, you're amazing, you have whatever you want just because you want it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the actual substance underneath that isn't there, and so I think there's.
What do you mean by that?
Classic example is people always having the answer. People always say, this is what you should do, this is what you should do. And actually they don't know that that's what you should do.
Yeah.
People, I'll often say, if you have a look at TikTok or Instagram or any of that stuff, usually my bet is that the happier somebody looks on their social feed, the less happy they actually are, the less fulfilling their life is. And so I think it's a tricky one for employers, because it shouldn't be our job to raise individuals and to be the families and the parents and the psychologists.
Absolutely not.
But, and we've got to draw that line. We do need to draw that line. But at the same time, if you can really tap into somebody and get rid of all that noise and the bravado and the social and the I call it above the line identity and actually cut into the real identity, you will drive such better performance. So I think the principles are still the same in terms of leadership, but I think the environment and the things you're battling against and the context you're operating within has changed dramatically.
I really like your take on that, Mark. So it's different from saying for the first time ever there's how many generations in the workforce and they've split the boomers into two now.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's Generation Jones as well. But for the first time there's all the – you're not saying it's about the generations. You're saying it's about the context because people across all generations are presenting themselves.
Well, that's right.
Well, even on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. We won this award. We won – I was so proud, whatever, and I think –
Oh, the one I love, I've got some stuff on this, but the one I love is something that says, oh, I'm blessed and humbled. It, usually that's a bad start. You know what's going to come.
Yeah, yeah. Blessed because I was picked as the...
Well, that's, they'll say, oh, after 3 years of, you know, huge challenge and complexity, and I completed a course. And you're like, oh, my goodness. I mean, I actually do quite a lot of work on personal branding and talking to people about that. And what I say is if you are really genuinely proud, be proud, own it, and say, I'm just really pleased as punch and want to share it with you. But instead we get this almost like an Oscars acceptance speech, you know, because you did a course or because you changed jobs or the truth is, to some degree, most people don't really care. And it that sounds like a horribly negative thing, but it is. And so we're living out our lives, we're living out, it's the, what I'll often say is if you've done something that's really awesome, just ask yourself the question, is LinkedIn the place where I'm going to get the response and the validation that I'm looking for?
Or is it my family?
Or is it my family? Or if you don't have family that are close, I've got a small group of really close friends.
Yeah.
And we achieve something awesome in the business. And I message them.
Yeah.
Because they will celebrate with me. They'll also call me out if I get a bit big-headed or, you know, it's people I trust.
Yeah.
Whereas social media above the line and so on. So the thing to understand, if you're managing staff, that stuff isn't left at the door. In there all the time.
So it's the above the line identity. Is that what you said?
Yeah, and I'd probably phrase that right. It's the above the line projection. It's
projection.
The above the line. You know, it's you go on stage.
Of course.
And I think a lot of people are living their entire life.
You do your
life
podcast,
on stage.
You know?
Yeah, that's right.
We always speak like this.
Yeah. Well, I actually do. And I think that, you know, that's a key part of it. It's the same linking it back to leadership. Why do people feel the need in on a stage or in a job interview or when someone presses record? To speak in a different way, to be a different person, to project something different. And I think deep down we've sort of been told or taught somehow that you aren't enough the way you are and who you are. And I'm here to say not only are you enough, you are so awesome when you're you. When you as a leader, if you're a quiet leader, if you're an introverted leader, amazing.
Yeah.
We need that. If you're a leader who brings that energy and might sometimes feel it's a bit much, well, that's okay. You know, that's part of your, that's your superpower. So I think as leaders, we've got to get more comfortable with that. But we've got to, I think leadership in the past, you could achieve a lot without being entirely, with being very structured, but without being malleable to circumstance, without sort of flexing and being agile. And I think the first thing we need to do is relax, take the pressure off and actually ask people, now, what do you think? Where are you at? How do we get this done? It's a different world.
Well, it is a different world because it's taking the pressure off you, and you've said a couple of times about as a leader, relax. But there's also that with your dealing with, you know, a team who also have this kind of above the line projection. And so it's how to really cut through that as well.
Yeah. I'll give you an example, Stephanie, values, company values, right? So values have been around for a very long time.
Badly.
And I'm 100% in the category that are extremely powerful. And yet in most businesses, they're words on a wall. Mm. They're a stick that people will beat the leaders with when they're not happy with the decisions they made.
Yeah.
And you know, in the past, consistently values were done in executive rooms, on the away day, the exec retreat.
Yeah.
And I sort of understand it. Sort of we're the leaders of the organization. We need to set the tone. But I just don't think that's feasible anymore. I don't think it's appropriate. I think in the way the world is now, the way people are now, there's an imperative and there's an opportunity to get your people genuinely showing what those values are. Now, in the past, everyone said, we do that. And what that is the exec decides them and then they put people in a room. They have a working group or they do a little survey. And it's a bit like giving your kids permission to, you know, stay home for an hour and see if they can do it. It's patronizing.
Mm.
So I think the way the values should be done is that the values, when they're done properly, really do and can differentiate you, set you apart in the experience of working with you for clients and for others. But also it's saying, how do we win? What is the secret of our success? What's in our DNA that helps us achieve things that others can't? And what's super powerful about that is you're saying those values come from the collective we have. And it's not just saying, well, what matters to them, what are their values? And but what happens is the people who join you, it's a combination of who they are, it's how they join you and the reasons they join you, you know, that why they stay, which absolutely links through culture, the values and principles. And then how does all of that come together in this wonderful magic pot to produce results?
So what about imperfect organizations that have values already, that need to get better results? Everyone, every business I'm talking to is looking for better results.
Yeah.
With a shifted workforce, you know, some of them at home, some of the time, some not, whatever. How does a leader really genuinely pull that all together? Yeah. When what's on the leader's mind at 2, 3, 4, 5 a.m. Is results.
Yeah. I think, and you said, what about imperfect organizations?
Yeah.
Every organization is imperfect.
Well, they are.
They're all we talk about, fantastic imperfect.
Yeah.
And fantastic imperfect employers and fantastic imperfect employees, right? I think marrying the whole thing up. So if what is on their mind is the profit number or the revenue number, the growth number, that's not something. There's a lot of sort of hiding that. You sort of, oh, we can't talk about the people. Let's talk about the purpose and the feel good.
Because otherwise they'll get demotivated if I tell. Yeah.
So you bring it back to the core, which is, and I'll talk about my own business to show that I'm not just preaching as some consultant, right? We have 18 people and I'm very, very clear. I need my people to understand that they feel, I think, the vast majority tell me that they feel valued and they feel empowered and inspired and they're grateful, most of them, to work for us. But I'm very, very clear. The only way that this works is if we together deliver our commercial numbers.
Okay.
So we've talked more in the last 18 months about invoiced revenue and booked revenue and sales and so on than ever before. Because what we're saying is look, we care about each other. We achieve amazing things. It feels wonderful. But the moment this falls away, if it falls away at a collective level, then we're done. And I can't employ anybody. And if it falls away at an individual level, then this relationship can't last. And the issue is, you often see, I'd say, more limited leaders who will focus on that, but with none of the finesse. Yeah. They'll just go deliver the money or else. And that doesn't work. But I think then you go to the other end where people are going, oh, you know, we want everyone to feel lovely and we want it to feel, you know, great leadership is
empathy without accountability.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And without that sharpness that says, what are we actually trying to achieve every day here? We can have the most wonderful week where everybody shares stories and we do recognition and reward. But if we don't make any money, it's not a good week because we're a business.
Yeah.
You know, so I think really being comfortable as a leader saying, well, the things that you're worried about for a reason, or the things you're gunning for and excited about, you're excited for a reason. You've got to get your people excited about those as well. If they are motivated broadly by very different things in their work, it's going to be very, very hard to pull that together and drive success.
I've kind of got two directions here. How common is it? How common is it for perhaps the broader employees to feel disconnected from the number?
Yeah, it is common. It is common, I think. And again, I think the way to get past that is to look at that role and say, how does that role deliver the number? So how do I contribute? So we have brilliant writers in my team, and they're creative writers. They're phenomenal at what they do, you know. And I, by default, some of them are definitely not numbers people. And so it's not about saying you've now got to care about the number you've got to care about. It's saying that they'll care about the number when they can see how their work contributes to that.
Yeah.
So delivering amazing quality storytelling means that clients are happy, which means they come back and spend more. Delivering efficiently, taking 3 hours and not 6 hours to produce that piece of content.
Yeah.
What you're showing them is you're being very clear. These are the 3 or 4 or 5 key ways that you can really influence that. And you don't need to get excited when the number's good and get terrified when the number's bad.
Yeah.
But you do need to acknowledge that all the things that you are doing. So what do they care about? They care about producing quality work. They care, they get a buzz out of doing it efficiently.
Mm.
And if you reward that and recognize that, that's the goal. You know, when you're showing consistently, it's a bit like, you know, somebody says, oh, you're such a great employee, thanks very much, and then leave. That's not recognition. That's just more noise.
Yeah.
If you say, you know, yesterday this happened and you did this, and it made a huge difference towards what we're trying to achieve. It's very, very clear. You do that in public, you do that with other people there, and you're showing what you value and what is important in this business. And again, I don't make it personal. So I value that, and it's all done you. I'm happy with you.
Yes.
Saying that is a perfect example of why we win and how we win.
Yes.
And so more of that, please.
What about then in the same way, and this is... you know, not new stuff, when someone isn't meeting expectations.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just the same process then in reverse.
It is. And again, it's remembering, and this is where it does come back to classic leadership that we've known for a long time. It's have those conversations in private. If it's a hard conversation, start it in private. I think really it's not the you always do this or you're that. It's saying this is the behavior. This is what has happened.
Yeah.
This was the result. This is the impact. And you're again, you're really pinpointing, we're trying to get here. We're trying to do this and this and this. And what you've done there, or consistently what we're seeing is what you're doing isn't getting us there. You know? And again, it's the classic basic leadership and feedback. Stop talking and give them a chance to respond. And then see if they can work with you to put it right.
What does a good culture look like?
It's a really, I love that question, but it's hard to answer. I love it because it's hard to answer. So first of all, a great culture in most businesses is not singular. You know, your business, if you've got five people in your business and they all work together every day in one room or one virtual room, potentially you have one culture.
Mm.
If you've got different teams in different places doing different things, you've got many cultures. And my first piece of advice is embrace that. Do not try and homogenize. There's this always been this push for one culture, one team, one us. It doesn't work in my experience. And actually what we should be doing, and this is important, we should be celebrating the richness, the diversity, the different things people do, you know, the different things people bring. But yes, at the same time, we should be saying, but here's what does unite us. Here's how you connect that together. If you look at any successful organization, a sports team, or a tribe, or a battalion, whatever, it's not all the same. It's not everyone the same person with the same attributes, same qualities, same skills. Sometimes you'll deploy similar behaviors and get that happening. But overwhelmingly, I think of the orchestra. Everybody's playing very, very different instruments in different ways. You're the conductor of the orchestra. So I think what a great culture looks like is a really high-performing orchestra where you have these amazing things going on across the floor and across the organization. Everybody's contributing their bit. And by the way, there's a part where the strings don't play for a while and they'll sit and they'll rest and then they'll come in. There's a part where one individual really comes to the fore. So I think culture is looking at it and saying, not saying we are going to force. And again, so come back to the values. You do your values and say, right, from now on, the exec team has decided or the board's decided these are the three values you have to live. Doesn't work. It should be saying, let's examine who all these humans are, who they are, and how who they are applies in this context and how we combine to win. We do a lot of values work, and we've never failed to find a set of values that people across the organization can identify with. And yet it's a set of values with so many different people. That's about really understanding each individual and each area and each team, and then looking at what unites it.
So with your 18, how many cultures would you say you have?
Good question. I would say four. So I think we've got we have people in different parts of Australia. We've got a core in Brisbane, Queensland. We've got a Melbourne team. We've got people in Sydney. We've got somebody else in regional. And so I think there's a little bit of a line there. So to be specific, we've got one group that's in an office together reasonably regularly, but not everybody who's in Brisbane comes in. So you've got that. You've got cultures that are set by the type of role. We have a lot of people who are strategists, we call them, and a lot of people who are storytellers. And by default, their roles are very, very different to each other. I think age, I think other demographics could play a huge part as well. And people tend to float. It's not fixed. It's not there's this and there's this and there's this. There'll be people who walk between. And that's another point about culture. Culture ebbs and flows and changes. And there's no fixed lines. I'm enjoying seeing it as a business owner, as well as being somebody who does this with clients.
So when you go into a client, where do you start?
Yeah, good question. So it depends what they need. So the first thing we'll do, as always, and I think anybody doing any external consulting or support should do, is what are the business problems you're trying to solve? What are the business solutions or what are the business opportunities you're trying to seize? So a classic one, we might have some who say, look, we really struggle to recruit. We might have others who say, we get lots of applications, but we find that a lot of people come to us, they're not right, or they don't, it doesn't work out. Huge amount saying people don't, either we have a retention issue, people will are leaving, or much worse than that, people are staying, but we're not getting what we want from the engagement levels. And so the first thing we'll do is understand, what are they actually trying to achieve? What do they see as the issues that are in their way to get there? And if you end up with, for example, with a values process, we'll say, first of all, who is this organization? What is your context? How did you get here? What was the journey to here? So I have a client who, small business, and now, you know, 10 years on, they've acquired two other businesses. Yeah. They've smashed three businesses together. And surprise, surprise, culture has sort of become a little bit misdirected. We have others who say, we've been amazing, but the world around us has changed. It's gone really well. We've got... I mean, we had a whole sector of it. Aged care used to be, you know, you'd hire people who were very good at following lists and who did the order of things and were, you know, methodical in that, and who liked being. So everything about aged care has changed around choice, around the individual client or resident or community member. I want to shower in an hour, not now. I want to have my breakfast later. I'd like to have different options. And so you've got a workforce now that is being asked to still get it done, still go through the list, but actually be holistic, you know, check in on somebody and identify with them at that time what is important to them. And they're very different skill sets. So I think you might find that you have that. So we'll say, where are you heading? From a values point of view, we absolutely will listen to the leaders. We want to hear from them. What do you think it takes to thrive? When this business wins or succeeds, what is going on? What about when you fall short? What have you found has happened? And then critically, we'll go out and we'll listen to the people and we'll say, and it's not the ones like the values exercises I hate are getting whiteboards and let's write them up and vote. I think it doesn't work. I write it on a post-it note. I don't agree. I think it's wrong. And but the first stage is to understand what actually matters to you. Thinking about your work here, why you joined in the first place, thinking about why you join anywhere. What are you looking for? What are you looking for in the organization, the employer? What are you looking for in the team around you? And what do you want to bring? And then we start talking about business success. So when in getting stuff done, what does it take to get stuff done here? We ask about people who who's joined, and don't name names, but who's joined and it hasn't worked out. Why hasn't it worked out? How quick is this culture? How quick does this culture spit out people who aren't right? Or how much do we embrace them or adapt? We understand all those things. So the first phase is really discovery and understanding, and you create huge amounts of data, lots and lots of things. We do thematic analysis, and then we'll say, what is the narrative of this organization? Where's it come from? Where is it today? And where's it going? And that's the leaders can play a huge part in that. Where are we actually going? And what's it going to take to get there? And how does that translate to an opportunity for our people? And then once we've got that combined with our people and their DNA and what makes them tick and what makes them tick here, then we'll craft and we start to say, what are the 3, 4, 5 key values? What are the themes? And we allow ourselves at the start to be quite generic. So you say, you know, the usual stuff, oh, integrity matters, integrity. Surprise, surprise.
Just like Enron.
Communication. Exactly. Just like Enron. So you build those themes. But the key is to then understand, before you start copywriting and coming up with creative stuff, you need to say, what is the angle of those values, of those themes? When we say teamwork, what does that actually mean here? What does it mean? Because by default, those words are used over and over again to mean a million different things. And then how do those things combine? And then and only then will we find the right words, the right concepts to bring this value to life in a unique way. But it's not about unique so it's different. And it's not about so they can memorize it. It's not about that.
What is unique for the business, what actually is meaningful and authentic for that business.
That's right. And so the goal is that, first of all, the employees and the leaders of the business see these values and say, oh, my goodness. Now, I still remember a former Vistage member, actually, who is the CEO of an alcohol and other drugs charity, and that when we played back their values, he said, it's so well captured what I couldn't say in my own words.
Oh, nice.
And that's what you're looking for. And time and time again, this organization, they bring in people. People say, I was attracted to apply because of your values. Mm. I see them being lived.
Mm.
The hard conversations are delivered with these values on the table or on the screen. The recognition, the positive stuff is delivered with the values on the screen, not in order to reinforce the values, but because the values guide the conversation.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I'm just thinking while you're talking, I mean, this is a really interesting and robust piece of work. Can a leader do this on their own?
So it's like anything, you can do anything on your own if you want to. It's about how well it comes out and what happens. Yeah. And there's three key reasons that I think you'd use an external partner. In reverse order, capacity, time to do it. You know, I'd say that's 4% of the value of this. The capability, you know, you've got your members are amazing. I've met so many of them, and the businesses they run are incredible. And I couldn't do any of what they do, right? But I'm good at what I do. And so I think having the expertise, there's a couple of really key points. One is running a really structured exercise that is in depth and robust. But that feels organic and authentic to the people involved. Your employees, they can't feel like lab rats in focus groups. You know, it's got to be authentic. And where the exercise is shaped so that somebody leaves the discovery process more likely to be an advocate for you. So before they even see the output, they go, that's cool that you engage me and listen to me.
You really listen to me.
Rather than, here we go again, another leader thing, right?
Yes. Or HR. So we've had capacity, capability,
objectivity.
Yeah, right. Well, of course.
It's very, very simple. If you go in, even if you're amazing at this, even if you don't do it, of course you're biased. Of course you're already seen in a certain light. You can't run that yourself. Even so, I own my own business and run it. But when we did our values, I stepped right away from that process. I was part of it. I got to be involved. It wasn't for me to run that process. I'm way too close. So the objectivity really helps.
So winning through people, through your people, is about being mindful of the ever-changing context of work and the people that the person you are as a leader and the people that are in your team.
Absolutely.
And the people that you're bringing into your team.
Mm.
And so it's being aware of this general context right now of what you've said above the line projection, which I really love. I'm going to think about that one. And then it's pulling together the whole picture of culture, and you've talked about multicultures in an organization, and then being really real about what the values are too.
Yeah. And you know what? If there's one piece of advice I'd give your members for this next phase of where they are right now, it's own the work in progress. Embrace the work in progress and the journey, including the bad stuff.
Yes.
And center that in everything. So your recruitment process, and including your ads. You've heard me say this before, Stephanie, but I'll always say, in your job ads, here are three reasons why we hope you'll love working with us. And here are three reasons why we're afraid you might not. In the interviews, rather than both pretend it, you know, people do this dance.
Yeah.
You know, they'll say, what's your greatest weakness?
And
person says, I work too hard. It's not true.
And how's the culture here?
Yeah. Fabulous. Yeah. Oh, fabulous. So what about saying, you know what, the culture's good. Overall, we're great, but it's not the highest point it's been. And we've got the team you'd be joining is actually really exhausted right now. They're pretty jaded. We've got a couple of people who are actually quite problematic at times.
Mm.
How are you going to go with that?
Mm.
What's that going to look like on day one when somebody, you know, when somebody says, oh, yeah, it's pretty rubbish here, you know? We're changing a lot right now. We've become much more commercial. Not everybody likes that. How do you feel about that? So opening up on the journey and the imperfection, there's a fundamental thing we all know, and we've known this for decades. People want to make a difference.
Yeah.
When things are tough, they want to survive. Good old Maslow, the hierarchy of needs, you want to get there. But once you're there, you want to make a difference. You can't make a difference if it's already sorted and done and easy. So actually, let's embrace the challenge. Yeah. And this is the same, the culture again, you see. If people come in and just go, oh, this is easy, isn't it? It's awesome. That's never going to be a high-performing culture.
No, well, absolutely.
When are your people at their best? When they've gone through something together and they've overcome it. and they've done it together and they go, oh my gosh, we did
that. We did it.
That's it.
So I think, and the great note to finish on is exactly what you've said about people want to make a contribution. They want to know what they are contributing to, and people want to make a difference. So much to think about there. We'd talk to you all day.
Thank
Mark
you,
Mark Puncher, thank you so much for joining us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
So that's it for Vistage Live today. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you subscribe so you can listen to us each episode. And for more information about Vistage, check us out on vistage.com.au.